The Jan Price Show, all about movies.
You're listening to The Jan Price Show, all about movies. And today my guest is award-winning screenwriter and co-producer and also the vice president and executive editor of Variety, Steve Gatos. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Good to be here, Jan. Thank you.
Good to have you here. We've known each other for a long, long time through the years, through the Carmel International Film Festival, which we will talk a little bit about. But what I really want to talk to you about is the film that you co-wrote and co-produced, entitled Heartstrings. And you also co-wrote some of the music in this film. So let's talk a little bit about Heartstrings. How did this come about?
I'd love to. We've been showing the film around the world and getting a good response. And fingers crossed, it looks like we may have found a home for it that'll be announced in Variety very soon. But it's been fun to show it to people and share it. And, you know, it's funny because Atta de Jong, the director, and I, you know, have a great pride of authorship and creativity and all that stuff. But I think we both, I'll speak for Atta, I think what's most exciting about Heartstrings is bringing this cast of all real Americana singer-songwriters. There are no actors in the movie per se. There's a couple of background players who are actors, supporting players, but all the leads are actually working singer-songwriters who are immensely gifted and exciting talents, and they're darn good actors. So I think bringing their work and their creativity and their careers to light is probably the most fun we've had making this film.
Oh, I'm sure that is. You know, I was wondering that when I was watching the film. I thought, is it really them singing? Are they the actual? Because you never know anymore today.
No, right.
And many of them had written some of the songs that they sang in the film. And so I was really happy. It's a really lovely cast and a lovely story, too. Tell me how this came about, though. Let's tell the audience what Heartstrings is all about, too. So they know what we're talking about.
I think it's at its heart, pun intended, the movie is really a celebration of Americana music and the sentiments, the feelings, the emotions, the truth telling that is behind this music that is bedrock of American folk and American country music. I mean, if you weren't looking too closely, you could just call it country music. The problem is that country music radio today that wouldn't play any of this music on the radio, just like they never played any of the songs from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou on the radio, but the Coen brothers still managed to sell about 13 million records because the music is so good. People love it. It's real. There's an Americana Music Association. They give awards every year. There are several hundred stations, digital and terrestrial stations that play Americana music. So this film is really celebrating the truth-telling of Americana music and the poetry and the lyricism. So in terms of the story of the movie, inside the movie, I was thinking, what's the best way to demonstrate the honesty of country music at its best and Americana music? Well, let's take a couple of people from that world and throw them into the world of reality TV, which in my years at Variety, I've seen rise and come up and become a multi-billion dollar industry. And it's kind of permeated by a lot of dishonesty and a lot of strange behavior and a lot of stuff that purports to be real or reality that isn't really reality. So you have this contrast between the two, the people who are fiercely honest with their music and the people who are fiercely ambitious with reality TV, who aren't maybe as meticulous about the truth, to put it kindly.
Right. And that's what we always wonder, right, about reality TV. Is it really real or is it Memorex?
Pat them with one brush and say it's all fake. But I don't think it's going to come as any surprise to the people who see our movie that we kind of poke fun at it and we sort of lampoon it a bit or we bemoan it a bit that there's a bit of fakery and it's kind of whatever it takes. And there's also, like with social media, there's sort of a tendency for sensationalism and maybe we can amp up the ugliness or the tawdriness and we'll get bigger ratings and we'll make more money. It is the antithesis of Americana music, at least in the mind of Steven Gatos. So,
yeah, I wonder if I'll ever get over social media and trying to grab those kinds of ratings, which is how you utilize in this film. That's what you utilize,
yes,
social media,
yep,
which I thought was interesting, too, in the way that you did it.
Yeah, it's all the Wizard of Oz. You know, there's somebody behind the curtain pulling the levers to make it go one way. There's a lot of variety reporting inside this movie. If you're really looking closely or you know the entertainment business, it may be lost on people that one of the plot points is that they're faking this contest of Americana, husband versus wife, singer-songwriter versus singer-songwriter. They're faking it to make the guy win because in country music today, it's 90% male music. You know, country music, radio, concerts, women are still worse than ever a distinct minority in that world. There's a reason Taylor Swift fled country music. It's no home for young women, generally speaking. The numbers, if you read a variety, the concert, the tour grosses, the record sales, the downloads, every way you measure country music today, it's a male-dominated art form. And in our movie, of course, the young woman in the story is the one who's really more powerfully talented and original and creative and sticking to her guns. And they don't want that. They don't want that. They don't want the honest winner to win. So
why do you think that's true in today's world of country music?
Well, country music, the women have always been the outlier. There's been incredible women in country music like Cammy Wynette and Patsy Cline and Dolly Parton, but they've always been a minority. It's not 50-50. It's more like 85-15 or something. But in the heyday of the great country music, which I would say kind of ended around 1975 or 80, I will say that controversially, knowing that not everyone, but in my view, the great golden age of country music probably is from the 40s and 50s through the 60s and 70s. Women were always secondary in sales and concerts to men. It just wasn't as pronounced as it has been the last, say, 20, 25 years.
So having said that, we'll digress a little bit, but well, you say Taylor Swift left the country world, but she's just phenomenal. I mean, she's just a phenom beyond. You know, she and Beyonce are like goddesses.
I tried to express herself in ways that didn't fit into the country music format. It's what birthed her. You know, it's what started her. Right. But it did not stay inside it and be contained by it because she's a pop star. And as Elvis Presley's manager, Colonel Parker, deduced 50, 60 years ago, the big sales are in the middle of the road. The middle is where, and pop music, people forget that as much as Elvis loved black music, he really wanted to be Dean Martin, you know, and Dean Martin would sell boatloads of records when Elvis was coming up. So to me, Taylor's strategy fits right into what we've always known, which is the sales are in the big center, not at the edge of rock or the edge of country. So
interesting. And here
I sound like a guy.
You sound like the what?
A guy from Variety. I've been reading things through the prism of the business reporting at our newspaper, our magazine now. We even have a credit in the movie that this is derived from reportage and stories in Variety. Interestingly enough, one of the key things in our story is that the man who is launching this reality TV show and brings this young idealistic two singer-songwriters into this competition, this character named Ray Purcell, he's an abusive, bad guy, you know, sexual abuser and a crook and just a bad human being. Atta de Jong, the director, lives in Amsterdam. And the big entertainment story in Amsterdam the last few weeks has been the trial of a music competition reality person who I believe is going to prison for sexual abuse.
Oh, really?
So that our movie is based upon stories from Variety. It's not an exaggeration.
It is not an exaggeration. But tell me, how did you get into screenwriting? I mean, you started, I don't want to date you. in this, but you started a long time ago. Sorry.
It becomes harder to not date myself. By the way, I'm doing a screening again. I did this in Porto, Portugal, where we premiered our film in March at something called Fantasporto Festival, and they were kind enough to give me a Career Achievement Award, which is just what they give you in show business. So I got an award. But we showed a movie there, and I'm showing it at the American Cinematheque in Hollywood August 26th. It is the first movie I ever worked on, and it's called Cockfighter, directed by Monty Hellman, starring Warren Oates and Harry Dean Stanton. So once I tell you that movie came out 50 years ago, this is the 50th anniversary of that year. You can calculate that if I worked on the movie, I must have had a driver's license, so I must have been at least a certain age.
I said I wasn't going to date you, but if you want to date yourself, that's okay. I date myself here too.
I'm celebrating the anniversary of the first movie I ever worked on.
That's exciting. That's exciting. And that's what's going to screen at Cinematheque in LA?
That's it. The Cinematheque just screened Heartstrings. We had a really nice Hollywood premiere at Cinematheque a few weeks ago. And because Monty Hellman is sort of a legendary indie maverick filmmaker, and Cockfighter actually, the year it came out in 74, it actually made a lot of 10 best films of the year list. It won't be known to a lot of people because it was barely released theatrically. It was banned in the UK because it actually is about an illegal sport that's quite violent and pretty ugly. And it's pretty authentic. There's a warning on the announcement of the film at the Cinematheque that this is actually a movie about real people fighting these fighting cocks all over the South. We shot it. It was kind of an inspiration to Heartstrings. My first movie we shot on location in Georgia about a competitive subculture. And 50 years later, I made Heartstrings, which we shot in the South about a competitive subculture. And I like to say that the only thing today that's as violent and vile and despicable as cockfighting is reality TV. So I've come home and I found the 21st century version of cockfighting. It's called reality TV music competitions.
Full circle moment. Who knew 50 years ago that that would be the case? It would be something like
exactly.
That, for sure.
I say I'm being a bit facetious, but not entirely. Because to juice the ratings and to juice the traffic in social media, what you need is anger. We have that line in our movie that you want people to be terrified. You want them to be angry. You want them to be ugly and mean. And you want conflict. You want people throwing things at each other. It's Jerry Springer into a $1 trillion high-tech world. It's all Jerry Springer writ large.
Interesting, right? Yeah. Interesting. You also showed Heartstrings. Why do I keep saying Springs? Heartstrings.
I like Heartstrings, but we'll go on.
Heartstrings too. Okay. I can call it both. At the Carmel International Film Festival, which is relaunching after having been a film festival for, I think, around 9 years. And that's where you and I met many years ago. And then it dissolved. And now Lawrence Rock is bringing it back and a new reiteration. And so you're involved a little bit with that. Can you talk a little bit? And also showing your film there. What is he doing? Unfortunately, Lawrence was supposed to be on this interview too, so we'll let everybody know, but he has COVID, so couldn't make it today. But we'll talk a little bit about the Carmel International Film Festival.
I'd love to talk about it because I love Carmel. First of all, you're right. You know, you and I met 10 years ago, and I have an overwhelming question. Why is it you look fantastic 10 years later and I've changed? I don't get it. So offline, what I'm doing wrong or what you're
doing. Thank you. I smile a lot. That's what I say. The more I smile, the more my face lifts. That's my secret.
And Father Time still keeps chasing me around the room. So, I'm excited about Carmel. I think, as I did when I first came up there, I'm forgetting the names. I apologize for the couple who were running it.
Aaron Clark and Tom Burns. They've both been on my show many times.
They really did a great thing in launching it. Carmel is, you know, an uncommonly perfect place to have a film festival because its history, its tradition, its culture, its art. So you have a built-in audience of people who have a creative bent, if you will. I have this wonderful book of 100 artists from Monterey in the area, that photo book that came out that I picked up there. It's a reminder that the roots of Carmel is an artist colony, and what better place to show film art than a place where basically you knock on any door and someone's probably painting behind that door, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great place. It's physically, of course, one of the most beautiful spots in California, and a great culture, great city. I'm really happy with what Lawrence is working on and trying to do. I think, you know, I wrote a book on film festivals a million years ago, and I've been attending and reporting on festivals for decades. So I feel like I can say that he's doing virtually everything the right way. Some baby steps, some modest first steps to try to get the traction. He's also focused on serving his community with films that he feels they'll be receptive to, they'll be interested in. So he's gearing his thinking about the festival toward what does Carmel want and need, which I think is a fantastic way to start. And the more you burrow into it, the more you start discovering all these interesting people who have some connection to the Monterey area, to Northern California. The farther you draw that line up and you include Bay Area and stuff, you know, you really start getting an incredible catchment of film people as well as those artists and music people. So I'm hopeful that we can, with these first steps, hopefully Variety can be involved and bring that kind of Hollywood, what would I call it, the Hollywood perspective or the Hollywood POV, and draw attention to it, but also have what we do, what we've been doing at film festivals. We celebrate our 120th birthday next year.
Wow.
So Variety was actually on the ground at the very first film festival, which was Venice, Italy. I think that's something like 81 years ago.
Something like that, yeah.
First Cannes Festival. We were the first every festival of importance in the world. Mm-hmm. So we've been covering it with experts and photographers and writers and film critics. So being in Carmel, we hope this is a new startup and a rekindling of community-focused festival that can celebrate filmmakers. I know as a filmmaker, if somebody said, hey, do you want to go to Carmel? I think you'd have to be out of your ever-loving mind to say no, because I just love Carmel. So.
Yes.
Jan, I'll tell you that this is decades ago. I was talking to one of the most esteemed film reporter critics in the world, a man named Richard Corliss. I think Richard and Mary Corliss were mainstays of Cannes and were internationally known. I believe Richard was at Newsweek, I forget, but he was a major guy. And I had a job at Variety to do a story asking people, why is Cannes still the number one festival in the world? And he said to me something I'll never forget. He said, Steve, let me ask you a question. Would you rather be in Berlin in the winter or the south of France in the summer? And that's a great orientation. Would you rather be someplace eating potato soup in the winter, in some place that isn't that nice or attractive? Or how would you like to be in Carmel, California?
Exactly. You
know, so it's a nice place to go. The community, as I said, is it's just a community of like-minded creative spirits. I think it's very hospitable to creative filmmakers, because everybody there knows what that creative itch feels like.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, well, I'm happy that the film festival's coming back, for sure. I was very sad when it had dissolved and when it did, but understood completely. And so I'm happy that Lawrence is resurrecting it and making it better. And we'll put to where you can buy the tickets and what the dates. Do you know the dates of the film festival off the top of your head? What are the dates?
But I think it's the first week of October. So something like October 4th and 5th around.
That's what I thought too, but I'll double check that so our listeners know when they can purchase tickets to go to the film festival. Obviously, you will be there.
Yeah.
I take it. Are you going to show Heartstrings again?
We may show it again. I don't know if there's a demand or an audience to do that again, but we may. We won't be coming out on the sale that it looks like is happening now. We wouldn't be coming out on streamers and all that until the beginning of next year. So it's still early, and you'd be catching a real early screening of the movie, because the way these things work, it's not going to be available on a streamer next week. It probably not until November. I mean, until February or March.
So. Well, good. Things are moving forward with that. And you've been the vice president and executive editor of Variety for a long, long time. How did you transition from starting your career in films to your role at Variety?
Well, Variety killed my film career. So Variety, who drove me into the poverty of journalism. Slight exaggeration, but funny story. I went to CalArts way back in the day. I met a filmmaker who became kind of my Zen master guru, brother, father, whatever, Monty Hellman, the great American novelist and critic, Steve Erickson, I think, described Monty best. He said, Monty Hellman is the ultimate outlaw filmmaker. Well, if you side with an outlaw, you better be ready to live in a cave and always be ducking the law. And so I worked with Monty for 50 years. And we made some movies together that I'm very proud of. But that all started back in the early 70s. We made a film in 88 that was in Venice, not in competition, but an official selection in Venice. It won a couple of awards. And a Variety critic broke the screening embargo. We were having a sales screening in Cannes in the market. And a fellow from Variety broke into the screening unbeknownst to us. Back in those days, Variety came out on Wednesday in print. That's all there was, 1988. And we're sitting on the Croisette in Cannes, and I open up Variety and I read the damnedest bad review of our new movie, which is going to be you know, sold that week to the Japanese for almost half of our production budget. You know, he killed all of our business, I think, irresponsibly and unethically of a journalism career by putting the knife in our film. But that followed on the heels of a lot of struggling. I had worked as a professional screenwriter with some very ambitious, politically minded films in Hollywood. I wrote pictures for Universal and Fox and Paramount and I believe Sony. So, you know, I'd really tried making a living as a songwriter and a screenwriter starting almost virtually out of high school into middle age. And I looked at my guru and his, you know, his hair shirt that he wore as a result of being a dedicated artist sticking to his guns. And I said, you know, I can't. I got to make a living here. Mm-hmm. So I segued into journalism. And it was a great thing because I have a journalistic mind. I love writing, you know, articles. I love meeting people in the industry. I love covering it. I love the brilliant colleagues I have at Variety. It's enabled me to travel and meet the greatest filmmakers in the world in the most beautiful film festivals and glamorous places. They've also kept an acceptance that I have what I call my gardening, which is my screenwriting. Uh-huh. And the way I do it is no conflict of interest because it's never really made any money for me. It's just been a creative endeavor. It's kind of like the painters in Monterey,
right?
You know, it's most painters don't pay their rent with their painting. I don't pay my rent with my writing, but I love it. And I've managed to continue doing it. I was doing it, I guess the point of this long-winded story is I was doing it long before I ever came to Variety. And over the years, I've been at Variety since 93. So I made a movie with Irene Jacob and Stephen Ray called All Men Are Mortal, Tous les hommes sont mortels, based on a Simone de Beauvoir novel in 94, came out in 95 with Audrey de Young. So immediately, I made another movie. Then Monty and I made a movie I wrote called Road to Nowhere in 2010. It was in Venice in competition. And Monty received a Golden Lion.
Right. That one received some awards.
Yeah.
I'll see if I could continue to talk with you. Unfortunately, our time is up, but you've had such a great, illustrious career.
Sorry? Always been a writer since I was five, always will be. And Jan, thank you for hosting me and having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I'm glad we finally got to do this after all of these years. I've always wanted to have you on the show, yeah. So I'm really happy that we were able to do it. So I look forward to seeing you hopefully soon. You know, I'm in Santa Barbara now, so I don't know if you head up here to this film festival, but hopefully I would see
you. Festival.
Sorry?
Variety has been we have a great partnership at Variety with Santa Barbara. It's one of the best festivals in the world.
I agree. I totally agree. Well, listen, thank you so much. I wish you much success with Heartstrings. It's great to see you.
You too. Take care. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
To all my wonderful loyal listeners, your love of film allows me to do what I do. If you want to support me, the best way to do that is to hit the subscribe button on the iHeart Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And of course, on YouTube. Subscribing matters. If you are feeling really compelled, I want to hear from you. Have a burning question, comment, or review? Drop me an email at thejampriceshow.com. Thank you for listening.
The Jan Price Show, all about movies.